If you have dreams or you're wondering how to make a bigger impact in this world, you're home. Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. I'm Deb, Mike's wife. I suggested this idea as a way to keep him busy and out of my way after he retired. So far, it's working. Thanks for listening. It's time for Mike Seminary and Friends.
Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, the place where we strive to make a difference, a positive difference, provide you something of value. Heck, from my perspective, we just want to share good stuff. I'm your host, Mike Seminary, and I'm so grateful you've joined us. A big thanks to my friend, David Hansen, for my theme music, Continental Drift. Search for his work, Serotonin Waters and Moon Dot Soup, on iTunes and Spotify. By the way, I appreciate your comments and guest suggestions. Keep them coming at MikeSeminary.com or Mike Seminary and Friends on Facebook. And please visit us at Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Today, I am so thrilled to have as my guest, business owner, an amazing entrepreneur, military veteran, a rig welder by trade, and a wife and mother. And by the way, I just learned also now the keeper of ducks. And when you have ducks, it's a lot of work, by the way. Kara Glenn of Silver Fox Pipeline and Facility Services. Kara, welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. Thank you for taking time to join me today. It's great to see you. How are you?
Mike, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm just delighted that you have time, because out in the oil patch, things sometimes are very, very hectic, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's our busy season right now, for sure.
So I came to know of you through, I believe it was a LinkedIn post, and I'm going to be doing a series late July, early August, on businesses that are either run or own by women or the CEOs. And I saw your background and I was so fascinated. Here's this young woman that has her own company that's also a welder and a veteran and in North Dakota. And I've got to find a way to reach out to you. So I appreciate you being willing to meet with a complete stranger, by the way, and share your story. So give us a little, the listeners of Mike Seminary and Friends and followers, give us a little bit of your background and how you ended up in North Dakota.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Like I said, thanks again for having me. I appreciate your interest in my story that I always kind of thought was boring, but when you say it like that, I guess it does kind of sound interesting. So I grew up in California, and I joined the military and did that for a little bit. And when I got out, I really didn't know what to do. I had this GI Bill and I had a couple kids, and I was like, was working different jobs here and there. And I knew a really high-paying job in North Dakota was welding. And I was like, I have to get back up there. I wanted to make sure that I was successful. And one of those ways, I was just thinking to myself, if I could, make enough income to where eventually I could do what I wanted to do. Because I didn't think welding was going to be it, So I go to the school in Newport News, Virginia, welding at the shipyards, and then came to North Dakota, which was completely different. Oil and gas pipe welding was completely different than a structural welding course. And I was a little lost, to be honest. I thought my network of women would be bigger. I thought I would be able to have people to ask questions to. And luckily I had, a great group of kind of big brothers that kind of helped me hone in on my welding skills, but you know, that kind of stayed in the back of my head. It took me a couple of years to pass a weld test, and it wasn't really that great, to be honest. It was a really bad looking test. I'll be the first to admit. And you know, that's kind of how our program, I'll talk a little bit about that later, but it, you know, we started a welding program as well. So I started welding for this company, and I was their only woman welder in the United States for them. And that was even more shocking to me. You know, I was just like, wait, you know, I just thought there would be more, to be honest. And then, you know, when I really started to look at the oil field, it's all over the United States, but it's such a small network, and there really were only a handful of female welders. And I was just like, no, like this has to change. Like this, this can't stay like this, you know? And
can I ask you a quick question first?
Yeah.
Before you started to learn about rig welding, how many female welders did you know at all?
None. I didn't know any. No.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't know any. I thought they were out here, you know. I had seen a couple, you know, in the shipyard, and I just assumed that there were a couple out here in the oil field, and there wasn't. There wasn't at all. And I think that's what made it even harder, is there wasn't a network for, you know, I mean, things have drastically changed in the past couple of years. I mean, now there's, you know, I believe there's a whole bunch of different communities that, you know, women in oil, of gas, different networks for, you know, women in the industry. But that group that is actually out there welding on the right-of-ways is still very, very small. So that's part of my mission, is to kind of change that, you know. And, you know, after the pandemic hit, the company that I was with, they closed their doors, and we were kind of left to, what do we do next? And we had, you know, my company was already started, and we were kind of going forth with that, but there wasn't any work, so it didn't really matter if I had a, you know, a pipeline construction company. My husband wanted to keep going, you know, he was just like, we have to keep going forward with something. We can't just sit and wait for work. So, you know, we didn't want to lay off the few folks that we had. There was some other workers that were here in town, and what we did was kind of start an upskill course. And that was upskilling. It was single moms who had never welded before. It was local farmers. It was displaced CDL drivers, operators, everyone you can think of here in town that kind of lost their jobs due to the pandemic. We started a welding course. And it was, let me tell you what, if you've really got to want to weld if you're in negative 30 degree outside for free, basically, you know, you're not getting financial aid, you're not getting, you know, these guys showed up every day to weld, and they really, really wanted it. And, you know, there was a point in time where I was just like, man, there's no work, and we're still putting on this course. Like, this is kind of crazy. But them showing up and it was negative 35 degrees, I was just like, all right, they want it pretty bad, so I've got to want it pretty bad too, you know. And we kept it going, and I mean, they all did phenomenal. They had a job offer within, I think, 12 hours of graduating the class. Class, I guess, program, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, things just took off from there. It was March when they kind of left the course, and that was great timing for us, because we kind of kicked off the, you know, oil and gas was kind of coming back a little bit, slowly but surely. And, you know, we've just been hammering it, you know, across the United States, from Texas and all the way up to here. And it's definitely been a struggle this year to start this company, but I couldn't be prouder of our company, to be honest.
So, thanks, Kara. So you had welding experience, learned that in North Dakota there was significant financial compensation for welders that could weld on rigs or pipelines, for example. Sure. You took the test. It was hard.
Yeah.
And from that experience, it sounds like you did two things. First of all, you came to North Dakota and you're welding, and then you decided to, because that test was so hard, and you didn't have a source you could go to kind of study for it, you made a decision, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make that available. Am I describing that correctly?
Pretty much. You know, that was never my initial goal. It was just kind of a back burner idea that I was just like, someone should really teach how to pass a welding test in North Dakota conditions. North Dakota conditions is the key thing there. There's tons of great welders that are in Texas and Oklahoma. They come up here, it's totally different. You know, you're preheating your pipe. I mean, there's so many variables, the wind, the snow, you have to be prepared in these conditions to be able to pass these tests out here. Not only, you know, be able to technique-wise pass the tests out here, but what you're wearing, you know, that day, because majority of the time, 99% of the time, your test is outside. So even knowing what to wear, you know, outside in those conditions, I mean, it's just a whole different ballgame. And that's really what I wanted to convey to these guys, these brand new welders and young ladies who probably wouldn't get an opportunity to do something like this, or it would take a really long time in this industry to get that opportunity. And so I'm just like, how do we fast track, you know, these people that really want it? How can we do that? And, you know, I'm not a accredited school or anything like that. So doing that is been kind of tricky. You know, we didn't charge for the school. That was kind of the biggest factor, you know, and honestly, I don't know who could honestly afford that school at a time during the pandemic, but that wasn't the point. The point was, you know, we had to keep going, and to keep going with something that I felt really passionate about was really easy, you know, easy in a sense that I was able to get up and still go do it, even though the circumstances around were not ideal, you know. And in doing so, you know, it's really sparked this interest that, hey, somebody needs to be doing this up here. And I think a woman is probably the face that it needs to be, because I think it's less intimidating for the young ladies that are out there that really want to get into this industry. But, you know, I remember what it was like for me. It was very scary to think, like, I don't know what type of fuel this welding machine takes. Is it diesel? Is it gas? I don't know. And I didn't want to ask anybody. And I couldn't continue to practice welding that day because my machine was out of fuel and I didn't want to ask. And so it's those little things that I want to make sure, you know, I know everybody grew up with that phrase, there's no such thing as a stupid question, but there are such thing as embarrassing questions and you just don't want to ask them. So
I'm going to ask you a couple then.
Okay. Yeah.
So your typical day now as the business owner of Silver Fox Pipeline and Facility Services, other than when you're training other potential welders, what's your day like? What is it that you, where do you spend most of your time on a typical day?
Cutting food up for the ducks right now. That's that's basically what my morning is. No, you know, like I said, we'd have these little baby ducks and they're taking up a lot more time than I would like. But, you know, typically I get here to the office and it's sort of setting up my marketing guys, setting up, you know, our guys in the shop, making sure our guys in the field have everything they need. Definitely a full operating owner, you know. I'm constantly looking to make sure I have MSAs with the big dogs, you know. I want the One Oaks, the Crestwoods, the Targas, the Oasis. It's continental. I'm constantly trying to reach out to those people to say, hey, we want to MSA with you. We want to bid your work. And it's been a little tricky because a lot of companies are still on COVID pandemic restrictions. So I can't just walk into an office and say, hey, who can I meet with? I want to talk about our company. You know, I'm new, but these guys aren't new. They've been in the industry a long time. And you know, it's been really difficult to try and do that right now, not only for a new company, but for a woman in the industry. I haven't been in it 35 years, you know, not even that old. So I find it really hard right now to kind of get into the doors with these guys. And, you know, I will say that I've seen a lot of, I guess, window shop owners in this industry, and I don't know how they do that, but I'm definitely a full operating owner every day. Really don't take a day off. It's get up and grind every morning.
So MSA, Master Services Agreement, is that what that is?
Yeah, that's the golden ticket right there.
And when you're marketing, when you're at least trying to meet with decision makers of the One Oaks, Continental, and the other Oasis, and there's a whole slew of them, you're marketing the skills of the employees that you kept on during COVID because you didn't want to lose them, because sure. that's the team that you're going to market. You have your experience, but you want to market the entire team of your employees, right? Capabilities.
Right. Yeah, Chris is the president of my company, and he's been in the industry 20 years. And over those years, he's just had a really good group of guys, really good operators, really good project managers, kind of everybody that was at our previous company. It was really funny when the company came in and closed, you know, they came in one day and just did that. And everybody kind of showed up on our front lawn that day, that afternoon. And, you know, it was kind of like those same guys that showed up that afternoon on the lawn, you know, they're here and they've got a nice office now. So it's pretty amazing to see, but that's where I'm going. You know, I'm just like, hey, I'm not the workforce behind this. You know, I do a really good job at putting people who are really good at what they do, you know, in those positions. And that's what we've got. You know, we've got tons of experience in this office, and they've been in this area a long time, which is the key, right? You know, these conditions are completely different. You've got to have somebody that's been in this area a long time and understand North Dakota. It's totally different than, you know, maybe a flat Texas terrain. And having these guys, like, I just feel really blessed that they've stuck with us, you know, and stayed with us, because we couldn't have done it, you know, without these guys, honestly.
The most recent, probably within the last 30 days or so, Williston Basin Petroleum Conference in Bismarck. And I think that's where I saw your LinkedIn post. It was somehow attached to that. Was that a blessing for you? Were you finally able to meet some people face to face and sit down and say, this is what we're capable of doing. We'd sure appreciate the opportunity.
You know, what I would like to see in the future from that conference, the conference was amazing. There was a lot of really good speakers that gave us a lot of insight on topics I wasn't even thinking of yet. These CO2 emissions and things like that. But anyway, it was a lot of vendors. So a lot of service providers. There were a few oil and gas companies there. And that was great because I did get to meet Daryl Hamm with Continental. I was able to talk to a couple of folks from Marathon. You know, randomly ran into a different person from an oil and gas company that I don't think I would have ran into if, you know, we weren't at that conference. So an amazing opportunity it was to be able to be there, for sure. I just wish there was more oil and gas companies involved, because they have to understand it's been a year and we haven't been able to talk to anybody, you know. And it's just been behind a computer or an email. And so getting out and seeing all these, you know, oil and gas industry folks was refreshing. It was honestly just super refreshing to see everybody and, you know, see people face to face. But I was just like, wow, I wish there was more, you know, oil and gas presence here. But the speakers were phenomenal. I think that was the biggest takeaway, was getting that information that I wasn't even thinking about yet, you know, and so it really got the ball rolling in some other areas. So
your team is capable of, and I looked at the website. I know some of the things that were identified there, but broadly speaking, your team is capable of welding on pipelines, you know, anything that requires metal fabrication, rigs, water, oil, gas, storage tanks and facilities. What I said right there is correct, right? You're capable of doing all that.
I would say energy infrastructure is where it's at, whether it's poly pipe, whether it's steel, the facilities, it's the steel from wind and solar structures. I don't want to say that too loud, wind and solar, but
it's part of the mix. It's coming, of course.
It is. It's energy infrastructure, and that's kind of what we're building.
Let me ask you this question, and this is not a political question. This is more about facts and reality type of question. Across the country, there are people that are very concerned about, they're concerned about fossil fuels, period. I get some of that. We're not going to wean ourselves off of why we need them anytime soon. We don't use fossil fuels just to put petroleum or gas in a vehicle of some type. We use petroleum products in probably 70-80% of all the things we use, like my computer in front of me, this pen, this cup. All sorts of things in this room are petroleum-based products. Sure. So there's concern about how we take them out of the ground, and then there's concern about how we transport them. And we have a lot of protests by people that have their concerns, I get it, over pipelines. But one thing I've noticed is we don't hear all the facts about pipelines. For example, there are about 2.6 million miles of pipelines in our country where they're moving natural gas or oil, whatever it is. Some people want us to move them on train, and it's rare that there's a pipeline issue of great significance. Anyone could be important, but of great significance. I think it's something like 5,000 train crashes a year. And they're caused for a variety of reasons. And the reason I'm saying it this way is, first of all, North Dakota is very dependent on the natural resources industry, coal, oil, gas, propane, all of that. We're also very, rail is very, very important to us. Agriculture is very, very important to us. And then the country still has great dependence on the byproducts of fossil fuels. When you're hearing the conversations about pipelines and protests over them, not that they're not good intended people, by the way, does that concern you with regards, and that was a long lead up to the question, I apologize. Does that concern you as a fairly new business, and you're the owner along with Chris, and you have these employees, and what the future could portend for your company? Does that concern you?
It is. it is concerning, but we've been able to very early on be diverse. You know, I don't believe that we're going to just stop using fossil fuels anytime soon. You know, I don't think that's the right answer. It causes a lot more problems when you try to do it that way, when you just have a complete shutdown. You know, am I interested in the conversation of, well, using wind and solar might be better for the earth? I am interested in, you know, what works, what makes money, what is doing good for the environment, you know, and am I sold 100% that, you know, these solar farms are it? I don't know. Am I sold that, you know, fracking and the way, you know, it's extracted is it? I don't think so. You know, I don't know enough, you know, about the downhole process or this really new solar process, you know, and I'm trying to constantly educate myself on just what we're doing, you know. But do I think we're going to be taken off of petroleum anytime soon? I don't think so, you know, and we try to, you know, do our part as far as, when I see pictures of the protests and, you know, the pictures of oil and gas and pipeline, those aren't pictures here. I would invite those people who are really concerned about what pipelines are doing, you know, and what they think of a pipeline. I would invite them here to look and see what North Dakota is doing as far as, you know, reclamation of after a pipeline is put in. The seeding, the contracts they have, putting trees back. Our lands are immaculate. There's not trash anywhere. There's not crude oil spilling over all the place like you see on these pictures. I mean, these are grasslands. There's cows grazing out there. You know, there's food being grown. I'm just really shocked as when I see, you know, on TV and I'm just like, that's the picture they're showing is really not what's here, you know. I mean, you know that. You live here.
Sure. So let me ask this question with regards to Silver Fox. By the way, how'd you come up with that name? Because you're not silver.
Chris has got a beautiful head of hair. I'll leave it at that.
As you can see, that's not a big deal for me. For the listeners and followers, I have no idea. What percentage of your business, because as I look at your website, it is diverse. You are capable of providing services to a very broad range of client types. Yes, you're in the oil patch, you're in the Bakken, and that's kind of how you got your start. But what percentage of your business is specifically a result of going back to what you said, their energy-related services, whether it's wind, solar, oil, gas? What percentage of your business is attached to that?
I mean, all of it. All of it's
attached
to, I mean, well, we do maybe 15% of pole steel buildings.
Okay.
But again, those are usually for industry companies. So I guess I would tie it all back to all industry. But, you know, we do put up these pole buildings, these steel buildings. But again, they're usually for industry.
Looking ahead with regards to the importance of trade in terms of welding or whatever else it might be, and that overarching discussion that we've been having for some time in our country as it relates to the significant costs for education, particularly a four-year degree at almost any institution of higher education. How do you see the trade industry and your role in it? How do you see that providing far more opportunity moving forward? Not just to women, but to, you know, anybody interested.
You know, what I would say to that is like I had said in the beginning, my overall goal, I was just like, you know, I'll weld for a couple years, I'll make some money, and then I'll be able to afford to do what I want. And what I didn't know was I would really enjoy welding, and I kind of opened up Pandora's box to really a whole plethora of avenues that I could go down, you know. And so what I would say is, you know, learning a trade, you always have that in your back pocket, you know. But, you know, more importantly, it's the, you're making money while learning a skill, you know, and you might start at the bottom, you might start as a laborer, but, you know, learning that trade is, you're always going to have it, whether you start as a carpenter and you're just a laborer, picking up shingles at the bottom of the house. Well, eventually you might be, you know, getting to get on top of the roof and put down those shingles or run that job, you know. And it's just like it enables people learning a skill, learning a trade. You know, now I do feel comfortable that could I go back and do something that I am very passionate about? Yes, I feel comfortable enough to that I would be able to do that. And I don't have a massive amount of college debt, you know, or, you know, these college tuition fees. I don't have any of that, you know. Again, I did have my GI Bill and I was able to pay for my welding course, but the cost of a welding course is significantly lower than, you know, a 4-year degree. And, you know, I'm still able to do what I want at the end of that. You know, if I don't want to weld forever, I'm not stuck, you know, like, well, I should probably stay with it because I went to school for 4 years. I don't feel that way, you know. So I think that's where I feel the most freedom, you know, and people who learn a skill or a trade will have that sort of freedom too, you know, to kind of move about to what you want to do on your next chapter, you know.
Cara, if someone were to go and replicate your training and education to become a welder, today, what would that cost someone, both in terms of the dollars and how long would it take?
You know, the welding structural courses are about $15,000 to just go in there and do a 6-month course or a 3-month course, however the hours are. If you wanted to do a pipeline course, first of all, I don't really know where it's even offered. And I'm guessing the cost would be around $20,000 for that course as well. I think there are going to be a lot of opportunities for people to get, you know, grants for these trade schools. And I think that's really where, you know, people are going to be going next.
Can I ask you a dumb question? You just said the basic about $15,000 and then the advanced course is about $20,000. Do you have to take the basic first before you can take that next phase?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So generally speaking, when let's put it this way, when there's a lot of activity in the oil patch, and that typically means there's quite a bit of welding that needs to be done, what could someone make at either one of those levels, that entry level and then the more advanced level? What could someone make in terms of an annual income?
Sure. I mean, you're looking at starting wages here for a laborer are $20 an hour, $80 a day per diem. You know, with a welder, you're anywhere between $35 to $40 an hour. You're getting another $15 an hour for your truck, and then you're making $100 a day per diem. I mean, you're well over the 100,000, you know. It's a lot of money. Excuse me. It's a lot of money for your skill. I mean, and these aren't skills that are picked up over a 6-month course, by no means. You know, these are Look, I practiced every single day for 2 years, and my test was terrible. So these guys that are out here passing these tests and getting these jobs, they're practicing every single day. But that entry-level position is even a high-paying job. I mean, that's $20 an hour, $100 to $80 a day per diem. That's a lot of money, you know, for an 18-year-old kid just starting out. I mean, these jobs are here in North Dakota. They're here right now. You know, this is our busy season. And I would say is, you know, go take a stab at it and, you know, go knock on some doors and just, you know, if you're willing to learn, you're going to advance for sure.
And Chris has been doing this for over 20 years.
He's been in earthwork, civil work, pipeline for 20 years.
Most of it in North Dakota?
Most of it in North Dakota, yes.
So he knows how tough it can be in December, January, February, because if something requires welding, especially if it's transporting something, whether it's a pipeline or something else, you got to go get it done. And
Absolutely.
That's just the way it works. Why should someone hire Silver Fox? Why should they be hiring you?
You know, I really like to brag on our company that we're local. These people have mortgages here. They have their kids in schools here. They have friends who are landowners here. You know, these people care about not only the land. You know, that's important, because if the landowner's happy, the oil and gas company's happy, and we're happy, you know. But these people care about this community. They're invested in this community. It's not like they're here, they're going to make their money and go back to wherever they're going. You know, no, these dollars are being put back into this community. And I think that's what I would look at. You know, if I could tell something to these oil and gas companies, I would say, hey, you know, just take a look at us, take a look at who we got and how long they've been in this area, their expertise, you know, and really take a look of, you know, where we're based out of. This is our hometown, you know, and we might have started out a small mom and pop, if you would say, but we're not that anymore. You know, we're back to the numbers that we were a year ago, as far as crew wise, equipment wise. You know, we're a very stable company. You know, we didn't have to take on an enormous amount of debt or anything like that, because we kind of started off itty bitty and we just kind of grew organically, I think was the most important thing for me anyway. So if I was them, I would say, take a look at kind of the care that we're putting into the work around here, because this is our home.
Cara, that's a great pitch, and I'm going to use that to tee up this question.
You need to write that down.
I did. You are not a North Dakota native.
No.
Right? You're from California.
Yes.
And you ended up in North Dakota. And how many years have you been here?
I've been here since 2011 or 12.
You've been here 10 years.
Yep. I came and scoped the place out about 2011, 2012, went back and forth because I was still in school at my welding school there. And, you know, the day I graduated, we packed up a little trailer and I moved out here. But this is my favorite place that I've lived. I've lived all over the United States. I've lived in Hawaii. I've lived in South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. And this has been my favorite place to live. It takes me 5 minutes to get to anywhere in town. You know, I've got my you know, I can see my kids' doctors and teachers at the store and talk to them. And I've never had that anywhere that we've lived. And it's just, if you were going to, you know, if you're in the oil and gas industry and you're looking for a place to raise your kids, Watford City is a really tight-knit community, and we really take care of our own here, that's for sure. So
when I said great pitch and then I had to ask you the question about how long you've been here, I just started reading Clay Jenkinson's most recent book. And I have to ask him, is it his 13th or 14th? Because in two different places in the book, it says it's his 13th. And the other place, it says it's his 14th. And the premise of the book, and I'm not really deep into it yet, only about 40 pages, is about what's the future of North Dakota with regards to the economy? Because we have, you know, there are forces that are changing the economies everywhere. How we handle the land, how are we going to change and modify as we shift away from fossil fuel over this long runway, I like to call it, et cetera, et cetera. And he talks about, I'll paraphrase it, the people that love North Dakota, generally speaking, they're natives to North Dakota, and they can't really imagine living somewhere else. And then there's that smaller handful that come from somewhere else, typically because of career or work or a relationship, and they find themselves doing exactly what you just described. That's why I said such a great pitch, talking about the people and the importance of roots, the importance of the community, the importance of having each other's back, the importance of being able to raise kids and have a great family life. Not that that is always the case, but you just did that. And as I was listening to you, I was thinking about Clay's book. And you could have been interviewed, by the way, for his book. That's what I was thinking as you were sharing that.
You know, you did say something that was really important, because it's you know, you asked about, I guess, my pitch to these, you know, why hire Silver Fox, but it is important that these oil and gas companies give local companies an opportunity to bid here, because we're the ones maintaining this community, you know, our money is being put back here. If these companies are bidding out 10 jobs a year to be done here in North Dakota or surrounding areas, and they all go to a Texas-based company, which at times when we are, you know, there is a lot of work here, you know, there, we have our ups and downs, and we need that, you know, workforce to come in and assist, obviously. But when it's times like these, when our local community depends on the people that are living here and paying these mortgages here, and, you know, we have small businesses here, you know, it's really hard when we have companies coming in from other states and that money is going back home. You know, you can't tell a company who to hire. You know, I wouldn't expect anybody to come in here and tell me what electrician company I can hire or whatnot. But it's just, when the dollar amount is what it is, you know, it's not a $10,000 landscaping job. You know, this is $30-40 million jobs. You know, that's really important that our economy is sustainable, you know, through the ups and downs. And the only way that we can do that is if these people here working and putting this money back here, you know, have those jobs. And, you know, I don't know how I'm going to relate this and get this out to some of these companies, because you don't want to be blacklisted or anything like that. But, you know, I think it is really important that at least we get the opportunity to bid. You know, you don't have to choose a North Dakota company, but give us an opportunity to bid, to show, you know, what our pricing is here, you know, what the value of having a North Dakota company would be. You know, I think that's that, what you had said made me really think about, you know, the issue that I kind of want to bring up to somebody, I don't know who, but.
You know, having an opportunity is all most of us ask for when it comes to being able to provide service to another entity, whether it's a exploration or production company that's based out of Tucson or Oklahoma City or Dallas or Houston. All we ever ask for is the opportunity to let us show you what we can do, the value that we provide, and the type and quality of work that we can provide you. That's all we're asking for, is a shot. So I like the way you're saying that.
Right. Let
me ask you this question. If you had a magic wand that you could wave over the heads of young women searching for ways to develop a productive and rewarding career path in the trades, whether it's welding or something else, and they have an entrepreneurial interest like you, what's the one thing you'd want them to know?
Well, this sounds really cheesy and corny, but be polite, be respectful, and be helpful. And this might sound like, what, are you serious? What are you talking about? But in the beginning of my oil and gas career in welding, I was like, no, I have to put on this really tough front. I'm very tough. And that really didn't get me very far. Nobody wanted to work with me. I was, you know, I don't want to say that word, but I was kind of a, you know what, and it made it really hard, you know, when I didn't understand how to do, you know, like I said, what machines took diesel or gas or whatnot. I didn't want to ask for help because I was just like, oh no, they probably don't like me because I've been really aggressive, I guess my demeanor was. So, you know, and I would say that to anybody, you know, man or woman, you know, if you're polite and respectful and helpful, that goes such a long way. When people want to give you an opportunity, they're just like, oh, well, that's so-and-so. Oh, maybe they're not the best yet, but they're willing to learn. They're respectful. And I think if I could go back and tell beginning welding Kara, hey, you know, just be nice, be helpful, be respectful. But keep in mind your goal, you know, what your goal is. And, you know, my mom always said, you know, birds of a feather kind of flock together. If I was hanging out with somebody I shouldn't be or whatever I was doing, you know. And it's just like I kind of found that group of welders, and it's just like I just listen. I wanted to listen and hear what they were talking about. And I didn't really understand a lot what they were, you know, pipe fittings and valves and outlets and now looking back, you know, it's just like, that's what you need to do. You have to figure out, you know, what you want to be, because, you know, if you have 4 millionaires and one random guy at the end, eventually you're going to have 5 millionaires, right? So it's like, if you're not a welder yet, maybe you're a helper and you're hanging out with those welders, eventually you pick up enough and that's where you're going to be. So you've got to put yourself in the position to be around and listen and be coachable to where you want to go. And that doesn't happen if you're kind of I guess that was kind of a bolder person to yeah. say the least. So.
Well, I like that. So be nice and be coachable.
Coachable.
Can I ask you a kind of a, and you can always say, Mike, heck no, I don't want to answer that question. Can I ask you a question about you and Chris?
Yeah.
So you and Chris are married.
Yes.
And you're in business together.
Yes.
What are some things people could learn from you and Chris in terms of, so you're in a business, fairly new business, even though you have experience coming into this. Previous companies shut down because of COVID. The two of you decide we're going to keep the talent because when things get going again, and if I'm not saying this correctly, correct me, please. When things get going again, we might not be able to find the talent to do the work that we want to do.
Yeah,
so you two made sacrifices to keep people. and you work together, you go home together, you have kids together. How do you prioritize and separate and make all of that work?
Be nice, be coachable. So, that goes for me still again. It was so hard in the beginning. It was really hard because we were in a little office together all day. And at some point, I have to, or not me, but at some point you have to take the person who has the more, I think the most experience in whatever you guys are talking about, bickering about, arguing about, whatever it is. I've learned to kind of stay in my role and kind of what I take care of and kind of let him stay in his, you know, expertise. And he really doesn't ever cross over to my area too much. But, you know, of course, I've got to be involved in everything. I want to know what's going on everywhere. But I would say, you know, you see it all the time. You know, at some point, you got to turn it off when you go home. You've got to just drop it for the next day. And that's been really, really hard. But you have to find something else to do, you know. Yeah. Sitting there and talking about it and talking about it at home, you know, meanwhile, your kids are growing up. You know, your kids are still, you know, growing and they're there and you're still talking about work and they're not going to stop growing. You know, you've got to stop at some point and, you know, life is still going to go on whether you stop talking about it at 5 o'clock or don't, you know. That's been really hard, but I would say, you know, if you're in a business with your spouse, significant other, it's you really have to talk to them at work with just as much respect, if not more, than other coworkers.
Sure.
And I think that's been kind of the key, and it took a really long time to figure that out until our offices are now like mine's here and you have to walk about a minute and a half down that way to get to Chris's office. So that was strategic. That was a strategic move.
So in the last couple of minutes that we have, what is the best way for listeners and followers of Mike Seminary and Friends to learn more about your company, to communicate with you? What's the best way for people to do that?
Sure. I would say we have a email on our webpage, and me and my assistant always go through those emails. You know, I'm sure there'll be a time where I'm not so involved in things like that. I don't know, maybe. But right now I go through a majority of those emails, whether it's, hey, how do I get hired there? Hey, how do I know more about your company? I'm pretty good about responding or directing you to the right person that can, you know, help your question. But I would say that our Facebook page, if you comment on there, our Facebook page is, we have a Silver Fox page, and we have I'm on LinkedIn as well as our company's on LinkedIn. And I look at those messages and comments as well, daily. So, you know, right now I'm still very active in our social media, as much as, you know, it's kind of hard to maintain, but I still do want to know, you know, what people are interested in. So,
and the website's silverfoxnd.
Yep.
.com.
Silverfoxnd.com.
Silverfoxnd.com. What's the last thing you want people to know about you, Cara?
Oh, you know, I think we got a good group of seasoned, humble people. I think that's the key word, is we do have a lot of, they are know-it-alls, but you wouldn't know because they're very humble. And I think we're easy to work with. We're all easy to work with and we're just fun. You know, we're a good fun group of people.
And they're nice and coachable, right?
They're coachable. You know, we have a couple, but, you know, we keep them in the shop. So
Kara, thanks so much for joining
Thanks
me
for
on Mike
having me.
Semirin and Friends. It was just absolutely a treat having you on. I appreciate you very much, and you just have a great year.
Thank you so much, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. You are profoundly appreciated. Where would I be without the team at Q1 Network? Anna DeVere, Ashley Harris, Bo Hastings, and Marlo Anderson. And my wife, Deb. Deb really orchestrates all of this for me. I have an incredible wife, partner, and friend. Thanks again for listening to Mike Seminary and Friends. Until we chat again, love y'all.